two endeavors. Kick it, boys. Good afternoon, Radioland, and welcome to Endeavors on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC, up atop the mountain at Simon Fraser University. Stay warm, Vancouver. It's a wet one out there tonight. Yes, 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 it is. I thought spring was supposed to be here, but we're still getting this winter downpour that we're so used to. Anyway, hope you're having fun driving home, studying, writing papers, wherever you are. You can also listen to us on the internet. We stream live, and we also podcast everything at cjsf.ca, or you can listen to us at TELUS HD channel 7014. Yes, I'm back live. Been doing some theater, got off the stage a few hours ago and hustled on up here. We got a live show for you today. Before we begin, I would like to give a special shout-out to someone who's close to me all the way across the Atlantic, in Graz, Austria. She was actually a guest on the show last summer, and she's continuing her studies all the way over in Austria. Hello, Selina Peck-Lane. Hope you are doing well. Anyway, we have a great, great show for you today. Our first guest is an actor, writer, and director who has appeared in such films as Swimming with Sharks with Kevin Spacey. He has one of his early roles was as Archie Graham in The Field of Dreams, and he had a small cameo in The School of Rock. He received critical acclaim for Joe the King, which was his first feature as writer and director. He's now just released his fourth feature film as writer-director, Like Sunday, Like Rain, starring an eclectic cast that includes Leighton Meester, Deborah Messing, and Green Day's Billy Joe Armstrong. He is Frank Whaley, and we will be talking to him momentarily. You'll also hear from a wonderful lady, Cindy Monsom, who is the director of a charity called Random Acts, short for Random Acts of Kindness, which was started by the insanely popular, the insanely hilarious, and all-around good guy, Misha Collins. Hello to Misha's minions, whoever's listening out there. I got a bunch of your retweets. Thank you so much for the support. Alrighty, so that is what is on the lineup today. So first, we are just going to have a couple of announcements, and then we are going to get to our interview with Frank Whaley. Back to the show. As I mentioned, my first guest is an acclaimed actor, and he's and within the last decade and a half or so, also acclaimed writer-director. His first film was the semi-autobiographical Joe the King, starring Noah Fleiss, Ethan Hawke, Val Kilmer, and John Leguizamo. He's now released a very different film. This is his fourth, Like Sunday, Like Rain, about a musician and who forms a friendship with his nanny, or au pair. It stars newcomer Julian Schlotkin, as well as Gossip Girl and budding musician Leighton Meester, Emmy Award and Golden Globe Award-winning actress Deborah Messing, and 10-time Grammy winner and the frontman of Green Day and Broadway's new favorite son, Billy Joe Armstrong. He is Frank Whaley, and he joined me on the phone from New York yesterday. Frank Whaley, thanks so much for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here.
So your new film is Like Sunday, Like Rain. Where did the genesis of this movie come from?
Well, it started for me around 2008. I was walking through Manhattan and bumped into somebody I hadn't seen in a long time and had sort of forgotten about. And this person I bumped into had been an important part of my life some 25 years earlier. For a brief period of time, we'd worked together, and you know, it was this chance encounter that started me thinking about a concept for this movie, which is the way that people in New York sort of come in and out of each other's lives randomly and can have a great impact. And so I was playing around with these two characters and started to write the script. And, you know, about a year later or so, 8 months, I had the script finished.
Now, many people might know you as an actor, of course, School of Rock, Field of Dreams, Swimming with Sharks.
Yeah.
Was writing and directing always something that you had aspired to do? Was it more of a natural evolution of your acting stories?
I started to write. I was always writing. When I was younger, I was writing and I was writing plays and things and fiction. But I wrote the first screenplay in 1998 or so. And that's really where I started to think of myself as kind of a filmmaker, screenwriter, and director. So and at that point I had done, you know, 15, 20 films as an actor, and so the two kind of coincided in that way. But it's something that at this point I prefer to do and enjoy more.
How do you approach it? How would you approach directing and writing differently than when you're acting in a picture?
Well, it's a much bigger job. It's much more, obviously a lot more thought goes into it and a lot more time. You know, when I'm given a role to do as an actor, you know, all I have to do is show up and kind of at this point go through it and do it. But the films that I've made four now, they take, you know, this most recent one, like Sunday Lake Rain, it took me 7 years to raise the money. It took me a year to write it, 7 years to raise the capital to make the film, and then it's just come out in the past couple of weeks. So it took about a year after it was finished to get it out. So we're talking, you know, 9 or 10 years. So it's you know, for the kind of films I make, from the beginning to the end, it's a long, long process, and it's a lot of sacrifice and commitment, perseverance, and perseverance, and it's just a lot more of a process than you know, my life as an actor, which is I just, you know, to pick up a call from, you know, from my agent, do you want to go and do this movie? Sure, I'll go do it. And so, you know, it's not, at this point. But I enjoy the life of my life as a director and a writer. It's much more fulfilling artistically for me.
For the most part, you've sort of avoided the really big summer blockbuster type of movies. What is the appeal for you of a smaller movie like Sunday Lake Rain or Joe the King or even something like Swimming Like Sharks?
Well, it's just what I do. You know, it's as a writer, I write small, for want of a better word. I write character-driven stories about people. They're realistic, I hope, and you know, I guess I would like to be able to write big movies or, you know, more commercial movies. I'm sure they pay much better. But I just don't really know how to do it. You know, the stories that come to me are those stories that mirror our everyday existence as human beings. That's the kind of stories I like to tell. They're just depictions of pockets of humanity. That's how I like to look at them. And you know, this story that became like Sunday Like Rain is really, it's a story of these two people. One is a little boy who happens to be a prodigy, a cello prodigy, a musician, and he's 12 and he's about to graduate from high school and, you know, go on to college at MIT, and he's a composer and a musician. And it's a story about how he meets this person who comes to take care of him for the summer, and they become friends. You know, so those are the stories. It's the story that came into my mind, and the story I like. I thought I could tell, and you know, if the bigger stories, the cars and explosions and guns and those things, those don't really come into my head.
How would you describe your overall writing process? I mean, you mentioned that the screenplay took about a year to write, but when you're sort of formulating an idea and putting it all together, how would you describe the overall process that occurs?
Well, I tend to get the characters in my mind, and they kind of live there for a while before I do anything. And you know, while I'm running, or you know, on a train, or you know, just in my everyday life, I tend to roll them around in my head and kind of, you know, before I even begin to write anything, think of these characters or the story in my mind, and so it's a thought process at first, and then when I start to write, it usually, if it's to successfully become something that I complete, it kind of flows right out of mine. I write by hand at first, and then the keyboard later. Being in my 50s, that's just how I don't know, maybe it's a generational thing, but I tend to write in shorthand. And that's really it, you know, with all the scripts that I've written and completed or anything I write, it kind of just, I formulate it in my head at first, a general rough draft, you know, a sketch, a charcoal sketch of it in my mind, and then I like to have it mapped out that way, where it's going, you know, almost like a true story of what happened, and then I put it onto paper.
Music obviously plays a central role in this movie, and you've appeared in several music-themed movies in the past, School of Rock, The Doors. What has music meant to you in your life? How big of a role has it played?
Pretty substantial. You know, I grew up, when I was a kid, I grew up very poor, but music was always, you know, in the house. My mom, for some reason, loved, I don't know why, we were, you know, we loved music from, you know, I grew up in the 70s, so my mom loved soul and R&B music, and that was a huge part of my life growing up, and she was always playing those types of records in the house, and I love music, and I early on became a drummer and played the drums, and also for a brief period of time when I was a kid played the trumpet, which plays a big part in it, and like Sunday Like Rain as well, and so yeah, it's been a big part of my life, and when I'm the films that I've made, I always think, you know, along with the writing, I always think in terms of score and music, because it's the music in my films, I hope play a large part, and they're very evocative. And in this recent film, it's 90% of the film is the music.
Was that why was it important to at least for the three sort of musical characters in the film that you cast people who actually had some level of musical talent, Leighton, Julian, and Billy Joe?
Well, that was more or less coincidence, because I wasn't really aware of Leighton's musical background. I knew that she had dabbled in the, you know, in the recording business and I knew peripherally, but that didn't play a real large part. And Billy Joe, obviously, I knew his music, and I was a great admirer of Green Day and that. But you know, with Billy Joe, my casting director suggested, because the character was a musician, and the character that he plays in the movie is a musician or kind of a wannabe musician. You know, he's you know, it's mentioned that he's not having very much success as a musician. And my casting director said, maybe we can, you know, get somebody who actually has a background in that. And I thought about it, and she suggested Billy Joe Armstrong, and I looked at some of the acting that he had done. He had done an episode of a show called Nurse Jackie, which I liked. I thought I thought he was really good, and so it was more than his persona, you know, as a musician than his actual music. And turns out he's a really good actor.
This was his first major role where he doesn't really play himself.
His first feature film.
And you know, how did you find? And he's obviously a very, you know, established musician. But how did you find working with him in for what is essentially a first time actor?
It was similar to the way I worked with the youngster Julian. You know, it's a different method or a different approach to as a director than with someone with more experience. It's just broader strokes, and you know, he was obviously a bit apprehensive because it was his first time, and he didn't want to do the wrong thing. So it's just kind of a very gentle and encouraging and supportive. And you know, I was confident that Billy Joe knew, because of his years of performing, you know, and you know, he basically plays, you know, the Green Day character when he's on stage, and so that's a form of acting. So I was confident that he would be great, and he could do it, and so I kind of just, you know, guided him and helped him and let him know that I was there, and if he had any questions, and he had, you know, lots of questions. It's, you know, it's kind of an acquired ability, screen acting. It's, you know, the camera is very close, and can sometimes be very technical. But what I was most impressed with is that with Billy was that the character that he played, I had written with a kind of he was kind of a menacing character, you know, in the scheme of the film, and very almost with kind of a violent, angry streak. And what Billy naturally brought to the role was something that I didn't even know was in it, and it was kind of made him very likable and very relatable, and the film needed that, the character needed that, and you know, that's what you hope for and want and expect from the actors, that they will bring themselves in some ways into it and interpret it in a way that helps the overall picture. And you know, that's what Billy Joe definitely did, and I was really thankful for that.
I want to bring up something you touched on about musicians sort of playing a character when they perform, and we see a lot of crossover in the music and acting world. You know, Leighton's one. There's plenty others. Is that part of the reason why musicians can make such good actors, and vice versa?
Yeah, it's all the same. You know, it's. I think musicians like Billy Joe, you know, they it's like it's just another form of expression. It comes with the territory, and with Leighton, you know, she happens to possess, you know, an incredibly beautiful voice, and she's really a really talented songwriter. And it can be tough because the public, or you know, they're not willing in a lot of ways willing to accept that crossover, so it can be very challenging, you know, in both directions, you know, for Billy Joe wanting to be an actor, he's such an iconic at this point figure in the music world, that they have so many fans across the world. They don't really want to see him in a different light. So it does, as an artist, if you're successful, like both of these people are, there's a danger to it. But I understand that if you have that inside of you wanting to do it, if you're an artist, you know, who specializes in oil painting, and you happen to want to do photography, well, you should, that's your expression. But it can be difficult. It can be difficult to do. It can be difficult to be successful at, and your public may not want to see that. But I think these two, Lily Joe and Leighton, her recent recording, her album, I love it. I think it's beautiful, and I think it's her, and it's unique to her. And as I said, Billy Joe, this role they did for me, I love what he does with it, and he's really successful at it. So, but it can be hard, even crossing over from acting to directing. For me, it's not always been, it's not always been easy or accepted, because people have a narrow vision of how they see you.
Julian, who plays the main character Reggie, obviously is a cello player, and we see the cello fairly frequently. Emily, Hillary, and Jackie, even earlier last year with If I Stay.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about the cello specifically that not only speaks to you, but that makes for such a good aspect of a character on film?
It's a very melancholy sound that comes from the cello. For me, all the stringed instruments, it has the most sadness. There's something about, it's very dramatic, the shape of it. It's, and especially in this film when I was writing it, I thought about the violin or the piano for this character, but then, the way the cello, for a child especially, it's almost his same size at the time of the filming. It was kind of big for him to carry around. It was, there's shots in the film where he has to carry it to and from places, and it's very bulky and kind of outweighs him in many ways, and I thought that was evocative. And but for the most part, it's the sound that it makes. It's the treble end of it is very sad. There's a great sadness that comes out of the strings of the cello for me, and it was right for that. And then probably the other filmmakers that you mentioned, I'm sure they had the same effect on them. It's the melancholy, it's the sadness of it. And the fellow who recorded the score on Ed Harcourt, I think, captured with perfection that sadness and loneliness.
You mentioned the word artist a lot earlier when we were talking about, Billy Joe and people like that. And I think, at least in a certain way, there's a certain connotation that's associated with the word artist. For you, is there a difference between artist and filmmaker, artist and musician, artist and actor? Is everything all sort of mushed together?
I think of myself as an artist. I entered into the arts when I as a young person, and so I don't think there should be a differentiation. I consider Billy Joe Armstrong an artist. He composes, and I think that his music, it's his artistic expression, just like for me, I guess when I was acting early on, I became an actor on stage first. That's where I fell in love with the lifestyle of the art of acting. So I think of myself as an artist in that regard, because theater, that is truly a place where you explore the artistic, the art in acting. It's precision, and I'm not sure about so much about acting in film, but I suppose that is an artistic expression as well. But yeah, I think when I think of musicians, really good musicians, whether they be pop musicians or classical music, classical musicians, I think of them as artists, and particularly Billy Joel. I think he's a great composer of music. You know, he's very, very talented in that regard, and Leighton as well. I mean, she's a gifted songwriter, but also the acting that she does in like Sandra Lake Rain, it's so subtle and fine tuned and well gauged that it can only be called artistic. It's virtually perfect, and I think the viewers who see it will agree that there's a great quality to it that you have to assume is pure art.
We've been talking a lot about music today, so I got to ask, what is some of your favorite music currently?
Currently, my favorite music is soul and R&B music, and you know, so I do. I find some of the current soul music somewhat derivative of that. So I always go back to the roots. You know, I love Marvin Gaye. I love Al Green. That kind of the music, that James Brown music that's from that period of time, and Sam Dee's, Doris Duke, that kind of soul music is what I love. But I also love the music of Bruce Springsteen. When I was a teenager, Bruce Springsteen was a real influence on my life, because I grew up, as I said earlier, I grew up kind of poor and troubled, and what he had to say through his music spoke to me, and so. But I also loved Bob Marley at that time, and as I said, you know, the music, R&B and soul was you know, greatly influential on me. But you know, my son, I have a son and daughter who are young teenagers, and so I also enjoy the and they love R&B and hip hop. So there's greatness in that too. I get a little bit frustrated because I don't like music that samples other music. I find that to be, I don't know, cheating in some way. So I love originality in music. So I always look for that. But it's hard to find. And R&B music these days, it doesn't seem like there's any originality because it's kind of all lifted from the old stuff. So I don't know, that bugs me. Maybe it's my age.
And finally, I know. Like Sunday Lake Rain has an opening in Vancouver, Washington, coming up.
Yes.
But when can we expect it in Canada?
Well, I'm hoping soon. You know, the release has been a bit staggered, so it's open in the States now, across theatrically across the country in select cities, and including New York and L.A. It just opened in L.A. this on the 20th of March, this past Friday, and so I'm hoping that it'll be released theatrically soon in Canada, British Columbia, and that. But I can say that on April 21st, it will be available in stateside anyway, video on demand, DVD, digital, and that. And I'm hoping sometime in the spring that it'll be available theatrically, and then VOD and DVD in Canada. So. I wish I could be more specific at this point, but it's hard to know, because it's with these independent films, they stagger them, and there's different distribution companies involved. But in the States, it's available. Monterey Media is the distributor, and it's, as you mentioned, it's playing in cities like Vancouver, Washington, I will be keeping the public aware of the releases on my Twitter at D. Frank Whaley, the film's website, like Sunday Lake Rain, or your listeners can follow us on Facebook, like Sunday Lake Rain, and Twitter and Instagram and that.
Well, the trailer looks good, and we look forward to having it released here in Canada, or at least having it streaming next month. Frank Whaley, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And that was Frank Whaley, the writer director of Like Sunday, Like Rain, which opens in Vancouver, Washington this week and will be hopefully in Canada in the next month or so. All right, we have another couple of announcements and then we're going to get to Cindy Monsam.
But how did you become involved with the organization?
And this, my next guest is the director of the charity Random Acts. You can visit randomacts.org. Random Acts was started in 2009 by Castile himself, Misha Collins. Shout out to the minions out there listening, if you may be. And it's about engaging the world through kindness, one act at a time. This weekend was Amok, the annual Melee of Kindness. They just recently opened a children's center in Haiti. And this November, they will be taking part in a brand new project in Nicaragua. This is Cindy Monsam, and I also spoke to her yesterday.
Cindy Monsam, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here.
You are the executive director of randomacts.org. And I know it was started by Misha Collins, who many may know from Supernatural. But how did you become involved with the organization?
You're correct. Misha Collins, along with some other supporters, started Random Acts back in about 2009. I actually came aboard in December of 2011. And it's kind of a funny story. I didn't at that time have any social media presence, but I was asked to do some research about Twitter. And my family, I have children, were Supernatural fans. And so as I was trying to determine who to follow on Twitter when I set up my account, the show happened to be on, and I thought, well, they must have Twitter accounts. So I set them up and started following their dynamic for some research I was doing, and Misha happened to tweet about having a nonprofit and looking for a director, and I went online and did some research about the nonprofit Random Acts. Really loved their mission about changing the world with kindness and living your life in a kinder, gentler way and bringing people along with you, and submitted an application and was successful in getting the job. So here I am.
Misha has quite an extraordinary Twitter following and social media following, and that show in general has fans like no other in a very unique way. What is it about, you know, Misha's personality and his way and his approach to life that has made him so endearing to his minions on social media, would you think?
I think his authenticity. I think he's a very authentic person. I mean, he's funny and he's quirky and he's informed and he's interesting. But more than all of those, I think that he's simply authentic. He's authentic in his kindness towards other people. He's authentic in his feelings and what he cares about. And that translates, I think, both on his social media presence, in his panels at convention, and even as his role, you know, as his performances as an actor. And I think that's for me, and I think for most of his fans, is what really sets him apart.
You mentioned at the top there that you had joined Twitter to do some research for something you were working on. And how do you think social media has changed the way we communicate as a society, for good or for ill?
Oh, wow, that's a really in-depth question, and we could spend the entire interview, I think, talking about that. But I think it initially started as a fun and kind of, you know, interesting way to communicate with people across vast geographical areas, so people that weren't around the corner or around the street. And I think it's now developed into a full-blown communication source. We tell our live stories, we tell what we're passionate about, we tell jokes and laugh with each other and care about each other, not just across the room, but across the globe. And I think that, you know, from our standpoint as a charity, it is integral to how we engage supporters in what we're doing and keep them informed and participate with them. I mean, we're as interested in how they are taking our mission forward as I think they are, and how we're utilizing their funding and their supporting dollars. And that cross communication wouldn't be possible without social media. We just wouldn't have the means to do the real time communicating. And certainly Misha's a master at it. I don't think anybody could deny that he's probably one of the most interesting social media characters, especially when it comes to Twitter. Around, so that helps.
You mentioned funding there and doing money, and I know one of Misha's pet projects, almost since Random X started, was the center in Jacmel, Haiti, and I know that just opened quite recently. What can you tell us about that center and how it came about for the organization?
Sure. Well, obviously, the attention to Haiti was drawn not only previously with their socioeconomic condition, but then the devastation of the earthquake. And our board member had connections and went into Haiti, and his wife Lisa saw firsthand and found a partner in Haiti that had a dream of how to help the children in Jacmel. And she brought the dream of Bonit Afriani back, and we came on board. We saw the potential and the need and wanted to dream really big along with them. And our supporters came along. We started talking about building a children's center, and we started off probably, you know, pretty conservatively, one story, housing, you know, just enough kids. And the support grew and the funding grew, and the story is compelling. And, you know, all of our Random Acts supporters, Misha's supporters, Lisa Yoga Venture supporters all came together and created enough funds, raised enough funds so that we could build this absolutely beautiful community center and orphanage, about 14,000 square feet. It can house up to 100 children. It feeds hundreds more. It is really going kind of a pillar of what a group of people from across the planet can do when they're drawn together for a singular cause.
And of course, Haiti, you know, Haiti has received a lot of attention and help since that terrible earthquake. But you know, obviously, there's a lot of other places in the world that have been fraught by devastation. Can you foresee Random Acts stretching its boundaries to another third world country or developing city in the near future?
Yeah, actually, we've just kicked off our campaign for Dreams to Acts Nicaragua. We are partnering with a local entity there, the Free High School, and we are going to raise the funds necessary to build a building and a campus for the Free High School that will allow the citizens of San Juan del Sur, Nicaragua, who otherwise would not have the opportunity to get a high school and then go on to technical school education, the opportunity to do so. The school's been in existence for a while. This isn't a new upstart school. They've spanned at least 10 years, been very successful, graduated a lot of students, but haven't had their own campus. They've borrowed schools and buildings and locations, and so we are going to partner with them and develop, build a building and construct a state-of-the-art school so that these students who have a desire to be educated and to get their high school diploma and then go on to technical school educations or university and get degrees and come back and serve their community, an opportunity to do exactly that.
And I know this weekend you guys had a MUK, which is the annual Melee of Kindness. What can you tell us about some of the specifics of that event and what it's trying to achieve?
Right, so we started a MUK, and you're right, it's our annual Melee of Kindness, and that's exactly what we want it to be, just an abandon all your cares and go out and concentrate and focus over the course of these 2 days to bring kindness into your community, your neighborhood, your area of the world. We started in 2012, and this year by far is our largest participation. We have so far pledged on our Facebook page well over 1,200 participants in Amok over this weekend in 18 countries from the Netherlands, Japan, the Philippines, Australia, Norway, Slovakia, Italy, France. In all of these countries, we have Amok participants. We expect that when it's all said and done, we will have logged somewhere in the neighborhood of about 2,000 hours of volunteer service of just going out and being kind. And it runs the gamut. Everyone participates in their own way and what's passionate for them. So some of our supporters will go out into retirement homes and hospitals and established facilities and spread kindness. They bring balloons and songs and just visit. Some people are, you know, have a deep passion for the homeless, and they'll go and spend the day with the homeless and bring them food and coffee and just spend time with them and being kind with them. A lot of our supporters are very passionate about animals' rights and making sure that pets are cared for, and so they donate food and blankets, and other people just go out into their neighborhood and open car doors and hand out kind cards and messages of kindness and hope. And it's just a weekend where we're just focused on that, on ensuring that in your community, in your neighborhood, in your little neck of the world, you're conquering it one act of kindness at a time. And it's been hugely successful for us. It generates a lot of pictures on Tumblr and Twitter. We really get to engage with our supporters who participate in our mission on a one-on-one basis. It's very exciting and a lot of fun. You should do it.
You know, and there's been a lot of social science studies about the benefits of giving and philanthropy, and obviously we know what the people on the receiving end of this get and what they feel like. But as someone who gives, or you know, as someone who gives the act of being kind to another person, what is that like? What is the person being kind get out of it, and how do they feel in the long run, would you say?
Well, I mean, I think the scientific studies obviously back up that acting in a kind way, even if it's just forced, if it's not really a natural act for you, but you force yourself to act in a kind manner, you reap the benefits: lower blood pressure, more optimistic viewpoint of your day. The effects, release the endorphins in your brain, and I'm certainly not in the medical profession, that cheer you up. So there are health benefits to participating in kindness. But more than that, there's a joining of person to person. There's a community and a engagement and an involvement from one human being to another human being when you act kindly that doesn't exist when you don't act kindly or ignore another human being, or conversely act unkindly. And that type of community and engagement and participation in the planet is what we're looking for. Human-to-human contact in a kind and gentle and loving and inclusive manner is what Random Acts exactly is about, and living your way every day. So as a receiver, you get that initial, joyous, someone did something kind for me. But as a giver who lives that every day, you perpetually live in an optimistic world. And, you know, our founder is forever saying that he is an incredible optimist, and he is. And I think most givers are incredible optimists. They believe in the good things that they do. They believe those good things have a positive impact and that people will pay it forward. And you do a kindness and then they'll do a kindness. There's no denying that the world would be a better place if we were always focused on being kind to each other and to our planet.
We're just coming up to the end of March here, but March is Women's History Month, and I know you guys have a campaign, the Women of Kindness campaign that I know at least Misha was wanting to get worldwide observance. How did that specific campaign start for you guys?
Well, we took a look at each of the month. We have on our social media channels a Get Kind theme, where we help people who want to be kind and want to join us in our conquering army of kindness, but sometimes struggle with what to do. So we take a look at things throughout, and we put them out there and say, this month's going to be this. So since March is such a historic month where we take a look at women who've really had an impact in the history, and every woman has had an impact in some way, shape, or form, but we really wanted for people to concentrate and take a look at women in their lives who have made positive impacts on them, women that they look at and said, this is a woman who's changing the world with kindness. And we all know Mother Teresa comes to mind right off the top. There's any number of women that could be pointed out as living a life of kind acts. But it doesn't have to be a huge personality. It's sometimes very nice to just recognize who made an impact for you and use this month to recognize them and to recognize that their impact on your life was significant and kind of just, you know, appreciate that and appreciate them and let them know the impact that it made on you. And then we'll spread that forward, hopefully not only in March, but throughout a year.
You talk about impact, and it seems, and it may just be because they're famous, but celebrities often are some of the most giving people and some of the most philanthropic people. Do you think that it's for them, it's a sense of giving back to the community, or is there something else that makes celebrities give more than others?
I don't know if I would necessarily say that I think that celebrities give more than others. I think that their kindness and their giving is publicized to the extent that you could recognize that they are doing that. I think there are hundreds of thousands of millions of people across the globe that are actively kind in everything that they do and giving and philanthropic and live a life of that. And they're just unsung heroes. They're very quiet. It happens at a local level. But I think that we look to celebrities and people that we read after and find interesting. And, you know, we look to them to demonstrate what they are passionate about. And, you know, I am hopeful that all of the celebrities that are doing these kind things in the world are passionate about those things, whatever it may be. We all have a tilt towards something that really tugs at our heartstrings. But I don't see it as a celebrity-only event. I think that they have the capacity, because of their status, to draw people in, to bring acknowledgement to charities and philanthropic causes that, you know, a person like me would not have publicized. But I think I believe that there are hundreds of millions of people across the globe that are just as philanthropic and just unsung and doing it on a local and communal and, you know, maybe regional and national level, but not to the same extent publicized.
And on that topic of publicity, it seems to me, at least sometimes, that the media is overly negative in the stories that they choose to cover. Where, you know, if it's about violence in the Middle East or a mass shooting here, or, you know, unscrupulous politicians, do you find that the media covers unfortunate stories more than positive ones? And how do you think that affects us in terms of our desire to be kind?
I've noticed of late a trend to really start to bring the good stories to light. I know locally in my area and across the country and a lot of the venues that I read and pay attention to, there's this conscious effort to find positive stories in the community to kind of balance out the negative stories. Unfortunately, in our world, bad things happen. They happen in ways that are just unfathomable, and they happen in small ways. And they're news, and so they need to be reported. But at the same time, I think there's a nice, even balance, if not kindness winning, I hope, just a little bit. And I'm seeing that trend in our media outlets and our local news and on our web-based publications to bring the good news stories, to focus on things that shed a positive light, because I think we all know that these good things are happening, and it's nice to end a program with a positive note. And I see that trend happening, and I think that because you see it happening, people are choosing, making deliberate decisions to have that kind of impact on their world. They see the negative, they know the negative exists, but they're choosing to have a positive impact and to see these stories of kindness or goodness or, you know, positive impact. And they're saying, that's the path I'm going to choose. That's the story I'm going to tell.
And finally, what is Caught in the Act?
Well, we have two other programs we haven't yet talked about. Caught in the Act is one of them, and Class Act is the other. So quickly, Class Act is about to end, and that is our program targeted specifically to schools and kindness programs within the schools. So it allows schools to develop a kindness program to be impactful in their community as a class, as a grade, or as an entire school, submit that to us and win money for their school to use for any way that they would like that enriches their school or the kids in their school. Caught in the Act is a global assignment, if you will, asking our supporters to tell us about those unsung heroes, about those people in the community that they see that are making positive change, positive impact, are on a mission of conquering the world one act of kindness at a time. Tell us about it. We then review all of the video, the pictures, the stories. We pick, Random Acts picks a winner, and we just picked one for a group that is, I'll tell their story in just a second if you'll allow. We pick one, and then we put the finalists up for a public vote, and our supporters pick the other winner. The winner this year from Random Acts, I think, is doing a great service in a niche that is, for in a lot of ways, not told. And our homeless community, we hear a lot about it. They get a lot of publicity. We know there's a lot of organizations that are trying to address the homelessness. But this group, Lori and Shira, they are addressing the animals of the homeless. And if you own a pet, if you're a pet lover of any kind, you know what a positive effect having that pet in your life is and how much you care and cherish them. But if you find yourself homeless, then not only are you struggling to take care of yourself, but you're now even more so struggling to take care of your pet, and not a lot of sympathy is given or empathy to that situation. The thought is, well, if you can't care for the pet, give the pet up. But the pure nature of homelessness and its isolation from the rest of society, to then remove the thing that someone loves, it's just unfathomable. So to have an organization that's coming in and saying, let us help you keep your pet, your beloved member of your family, let us help you care for it, get it proper medical attention, get it spayed or neutered, make sure it's well fed, so that you can keep your beloved animal, it was just heart-wrenching and such a wonderful story of people really looking at their community and how they could make a significant impact, a very, you know, very small window of opportunity, but still huge to the homeless population trying to maintain their pet ownership.
Well, it's a very great thing, I think, the whole organization is doing. Great thing you're doing, great thing Misha is doing. You can check out randomacts.org. Their Dreams to Act in Nicaragua is in November. And they just opened up their center in Jacmel, Haiti. And if you want to nominate somebody for Caught in the Act, you can do so by just emailing events@randomacts.org. All the information is on the website. Cindy Monsalm, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so very much for having us. Also, we fund just general acts of kindness. So you put pointed people in the right place to our website. They can get all the information there. We'd love to hear from them.
And that was Cindy Monsalm with Random Acts. Well, that is the show for today. My thanks to Cindy Monsalm, randomacts.org. My thanks to Frank Whaley. Like Sunday Like Rain is out in theaters in the U.S. now and in Canada shortly. Hello to all the friends listening in Toronto and Halifax, out east and in Germany and Austria. If you're there, I know Random Acts has connection out there. Celine in Austria. Auf Wiedersehen. Talk to you soon. And stay tuned for No Country for Old Men with Chris Spannenberg, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.